Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Tuesday, January 27, 2015. Lawmakers in northern Bahr el-Ghazal state move to impeach the state governor.
The process of impeachment has not been completed. Until it is completed, I'm still illegitimate caretaker governor of northern Bahr el-Ghazal.
And South Sudan's army accuses rebels of SPLM in opposition of looting a market in Upper Nile State.
At 1 a.m., a rebel force of Riek Machar attacked Imtidad Market, that is north of Reng County, north of Reng Town.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Lawmakers in northern Bahr el-Ghazal state have voted to impeach the state caretaker governor. The lawmakers accuse Quel Aguer Quel of corruption and of violating the state constitution. But Quel says the lawmakers' move to oust him is illegal. Philip Thornalew reports from Juba.
The northern Bahr el-Ghazal state assembly says Quel violated the state constitution when he overlied the state to take out a loan of 1.5 million South Sudanese pounds without first getting parliamentary approval. But Quel denies the charge. He says it is the lawmakers who voted to impeach him who have violated the constitution.
The assembly was not on session, and those who requested the emergency meeting were only 19 people, contrary to the constitution that talk about 25 or half of the assembly. The process of tabling impeachment of the governor were not followed according to the assembly conduct of business.
The lawmakers contest Quel versions of events. They say 42 of the state parliament 49 members attended the special session and 34 voted to impeach the caretaker governor. They say the board was held during a special sitting of parliament in the state capital Awil on Monday. In a statement, the MPs lease 7 accusations against the governor. Among them is that Quel misappropriated state funds. The lawmakers also accuse him of nepotism, saying he awarded a letter of credit amounting to 3 million South Sudanese pounds to his son. Having a letter of credit would allow Quel's son to obtain substantial amounts of foreign currency from the Central Bank of South Sudan. But Quel says all the charges against him are baseless.
Some figures are terribly wrong. Like the amount of money they said has been loaned, they are talking about 1.5 million. It's not true. There is no amount of that kind that was loaned. So then where did they get the information?
Quel also denies a charge that he's a rebel simpatizer and another that he defamed the state lawmakers in public speeches. He says that under the state constitution, he cannot be impeached unless South Sudan Constitutional Court approves the lawmakers' action against him. Quel also says that as a caretaker governor, he is actually immune from the state assembly's vote against him.
It should be the president to tell me to leave the office. I cannot simply leave the office because I'm a caretaker governor in the first place. The process of impeachment has not been completed. Until it is completed, I'm still a legitimate caretaker governor of North Bahr el-Ghazal State with all my constitutional powers.
Quel was appointed in April last year by President Salva Kiir, after the previous governor, Paul Malongawan, was appointed the General Chief of Army Staff. Caretaker governors are only supposed to hold office for 6 months, after which elections are supposed to be held to fill the post. Quel has been caretaker governor for 9 months. He says he is being hauled out of office because local politicians are unhappy with his efforts to fight corruption in the state tech department. But he says he will use all legal avenues to remain in office and make northern Bahr el-Ghazal state a corruption-free state. This is the first time that South Sudanese lawmakers at the national or state level have voted to impeach a leader. Quel is in Juba to attend a meeting of the ruling SPLM party. He says northern Bahr el-Ghazal lawmakers have threatened to arrest him when he returns to Awil. If they make good on their threat, Quel says it will be an attempted coup. Efforts to reach MPs who reportedly voted to impeach Quel were fatal. For BOA News, I am Philip Thornalew in Juba.
The UN Children's Fund reports one of South Sudan's armed groups has agreed to release about 3,000 child soldiers. UNICEF says the first group of 280 children were released today. It says the rest of the children will be freed gradually, with a second group of several hundred children to be released on Friday. Lisa Schlein reports from Geneva.
At a ceremony in South Sudan's Jonglei state, 280 child soldiers removed their uniforms and gave up their guns. They are part of 3,000 youngsters recruited last year by the South Sudan Democratic Army Cobra faction. The UN Children's Fund says their release has been in the pipeline since May 2014 as the result of a peace agreement between the leader of Cobra and the government. The agency says it has taken UNICEF and its partners this long to secure their release for a host of so-called logistical reasons. Spokesman Christophe Bouliarac says these difficulties have been overcome and the infrastructure and support systems needed to demobilize these children and reintegrate into their home communities now are in place. He adds this will be a long, difficult process.
Some of them have been fighting for up to 4 years, and many of them have never attended schools. One child spoken to by UNICEF said he had been recruited at the age of eight years old. These children will face some discrimination when they return, and there is a risk that some of them will return to conflict.
The children range in age from 11 to 17 years old. UNICEF reports in the past year, 12,000 children, mostly boys, have been recruited and used as soldiers by government forces and rebel groups in South Sudan. It says children continue to be recruited. Bouliarac says the children will be staying in an interim care center where they will receive health care and protection services as well as food, water, and clothing. He says many of these children will require psychological counseling. He says they will be given education and skills training to help them rebuild their lives.
After they are registered, UNICEF will begin to trace their families. This will be challenging given that 1.9 million people have been displaced from their homes in South Sudan. But when I discussed with a colleague this morning in Juba, he told me that many of these demobilized children are already in touch with their families.
Bouliarac says support will be given to local communities to help prevent and reduce discrimination, as well as to prevent possible recruitment. He says the release of another group of children is expected Friday. UNICEF is appealing for $10 million to defray the cost of the child demobilization. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
The United Nations mission in South Sudan has condemned the brutal killing of 11 civilians in a roadside ambush in western Bahr al-Ghazal state on Sunday. In a statement released in Juba, UNMISS expressed its condolences to the families of those killed when the car they were traveling in was attacked by unidentified gunmen. UNMISS says the roadside attack was the second in South Sudan in less than 2 weeks and called on local, state and national authorities to investigate the incident and bring those responsible to justice. As we reported yesterday, a heavily armed man opened fire on a two-car convoy on Sunday as it traveled between Raja and Sopo in western Bahr al-Ghazal state. Among the victims of the attack were five local journalists. Two of them were women, reporters Randa George Adam and Dalia Marco. The other three were cameraman Botrus Martin Khamis, Musa Mohammed Dahir, the director of Raja Radio, and reporter Adam Juma Adam. Witnesses say the victims were shot and attacked with machetes before their bodies were set alight. The violence of the attack left some of the bodies so badly burned that hospital officials say it was impossible to tell if the victims were women or men. It has been impossible so far to confirm the identities of the other two victims of the attack. Newly appointed Raja County Commissioner Maradom James Benjamin was in the vehicle that was able to escape the ambush. James and three others were wounded in the attack. None of their injuries were life-threatening. South Sudan in Focus extends its deepest sympathies to the families of all those who perished in the attack. The South Sudanese army is accusing rebels aligned with former Vice President Riek Machar of looting market in Reng County and setting it on fire. The government's military spokesman says no government troops were killed in the attack, but a rebel spokesman says the rebels killed 15 government forces. For VOA News, Charlton Doki has more from Juba.
Colonel Philip Aguer says rebels attacked the market early Monday morning.
On the night of the 26th at 1 a.m., a rebel force of Riek Machar attacked Imtidat Market. That is north of Reng County, north of Reng Town, and between SPLA position in a riverbed called Alga and Joda, that is a border post. That unit infiltrated from the borders with the Sudan and attacked the market after midnight and burned the market, looted properties.
Aguer says the rebels managed to enter the market because they vastly outnumbered government forces deployed in the area.
The market was only protected by one platoon, that is a small unit, and that platoon did not cover the protection of the whole market. So they withdrew to the headquarters of the battalion, which is in Alga. And in the following morning, that is yesterday morning, SPLA force was sent to the area.
Rebel military spokesman Lul Roy Kong denies looting the market and says government forces actually attacked their positions at Omdelawich, some 30 kilometers northeast of Reng. He says the government troops were repulsed, but not before they looted the area.
The market that you have talked about was actually looted by the government troops that were on the retreat. If you could recall the statement, Philip said the platoon that was deployed at that market pulled back without us even firing a shot at them or without them engaging us. So it was used as a pretext. The fighting in Mbolam, which was used as a pretext for the government forces to loot the market that they were guarding and put the blame on us.
Colonel Philip Aguer stands by his account and says he believes the motive of the attackers was to loot the property of traders rather than to overrun territory. He says, thankfully, there were no casualties. Aguer says government troops have since secured the area. For VOA News, I am Charlton Doki in Juba.
You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, university students in the United States are raising money to help children in South Sudan. That story is coming up after this break.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
how do you encourage someone who just lost a loved one?
You pray with the person and let the person understand that nobody lives forever. And so she needs, or he needs, to be strong and take care of the people that he has left behind.
I would tell them to take heart, because it's definitely natural for a person to die. You know, we are not supposed to live forever. So if something happened to a person and they met death along the way, I mean, yeah, you would just encourage them to take heart and forget about that.
Sometimes it's better to just give a shoulder to that person, or give them a hug, give them a shoulder to lean on, and don't say anything. Just let them cry out before you say anything.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus. It's time for our Tuesday health segment. Today we are talking about the HIV virus. The rate of HIV in South Africa is one of the highest in the world, with 2.6 million people now infected with the virus that causes AIDS. Medical clinics remain woefully underfunded and understaffed, and getting infected people to remain on lifelong therapy is a challenge. But so-called adherence clubs are making the job a little easier. VOA's Jessica Bauman reports.
What do you do if you are HIV positive and faced with taking a daily regimen of life-saving antiretroviral drugs, and you have to travel dozens of kilometers to a clinic and queue up for hours to get refills on the drugs, which cause unpleasant side effects such as nausea and diarrhea? That is the reality for many HIV-infected people. Those who do not feel sick may decide to stop taking their medication or only take it sporadically. That may cause a resurgence of the virus and lead to the development of AIDS. To prevent that, the non-governmental health organization MSF, Doctors Without Borders, has begun to set up adherence clinics in South Africa. In an interview with the New England Journal of Medicine, MSF field coordinator Lynn Wilkinson said the idea is to make it easier for relatively healthy HIV patients to stay engaged and on schedule with their lifelong therapy.
By requiring healthy patients to still come to clinics or to healthcare facilities to get treatments and care makes no sense when we're already overstretched. And so being able to manage patients in their communities, making it easy for them to stay on treatment, is definitely the way forward.
The community-based adherence clubs meet once every 2 months and now have some 30,000 members around South Africa's Western Cape province. Trained counselors run the 45-minute-long group sessions, during which participants discuss challenges and adherence to treatment. They are given a prepackaged 2-month supply of antiretroviral drugs. The state of their health, according to Wilkinson, is tracked at the meetings with a rapid blood test that tells health workers how much virus is in the patient's system.
We can, through the viral load test, see whether the patient is adherent. If they're not adherent, potentially red flag the patient for increasing support and perhaps returning to the clinic for enhanced care. But really being able to say to our healthy patients, well, to be honest, you're not sick anymore. We don't need to see you at the clinic.
Wilkinson says the biggest challenge remains reaching HIV-infected men, many of whom wait until they're very sick before coming in for treatment, and young women who may not think they are harboring the AIDS virus. Jessica Berman, VOA News, Washington.
And here in the United States, students at Virginia Commonwealth Universities on the east coast of the United States are raising funds to help feed South Sudanese children displaced by the more than 13-month-long conflict. VOA fellow Nabil Biagio has more.
Manyang Rith Kerr, who hails from South Sudan, and his friends at the University of Richmond started a campaign called Feed 50K. That's because they hope to raise $50,000 to feed 50,000 South Sudanese children who have fled the fighting in their country and now live in the border town of Gambela in western Ethiopia. Kerr says they don't just aim to raise money, but also awareness about the humanitarian crisis in South Sudan.
You know, people are not relating directly to the problem that happening in Southern Sudan. You know, right now 1 million are displaced and they live in border. So, just talking about it, and the news abandoned Sudan issue because I think they get tired of it. They move to Syria and they move to all this kind of new things because Sudan has been in news for the long time. It become harder now for people who want to start to do good things.
He says he hopes their campaign will raise awareness of the plight of so many young South Sudanese. In 2008, 3 years after he came to the United States as a refugee fleeing the civil war in South Sudan, Kerr started a campaign called Humanity Helping Sudan to help refugees. He says Feed 50K is part of that larger project he started 7 years ago.
Our goal is to work with entire Sudan, not just South Sudan, because, I mean, that's what we call Humanity Helping Sudan. We are not political organization. We are just humanitarian organization that want help people help themselves.
Eric Prince is the president of Humanity Helping Sudan. He's based in Richmond, Virginia, and manages Feed 50K's fundraising.
So right now we've raised close to, I'd say, 3,000 or 4,000 right now. We've recently just started this Feed 50K campaign, and we're really trying to get our name out there with it. Essentially, it's we're purchasing fishing nets with these dollars. So $1 equals one fishing net.
Prince says by purchasing fishing nets and giving them to South Sudanese refugees in Gambela, the refugees can afford to feed their children.
We buy everything locally in Gambela, and so we also help the economy at the same time as well as helping the people themselves. Within the village itself, we have four people who actually help make the nets. And with that, they will, obviously they'll start fishing, and then they'll be able to help the children in the village locally. So
Prince, CARE, and other campaign volunteers use social media and networking events to promote their cause. You can get involved by visiting their website, www.humanityhelpingsudanproject.org. For VOA News, I'm Nabil Biagio.
And now we move to Uganda. A top leader of the brutal Rhodes Resistance Army appeared for the first time before the International Criminal Court today in The Hague, ending years-long search to bring him to justice. From Paris, Lisa Bryan reports for VOA that rebel commander Dominic Ongwen faces war crimes and crimes against humanity charges.
All rise, vous vous levez. The International Criminal Court is now in session.
Dominic Ongwen has been wanted for more than a decade by the International Criminal Court. On Monday, he stood before the court in The Hague for a first appearance. Wearing a dark blue suit and a tie, Ongwen introduced himself to the court in the Acholi language that is widely spoken in his native northern Uganda. He said he was abducted in 1988 and taken to the bush at the age of 14. He said he had been a soldier for the Lord's Resistance Army. He also thanked God for creating heaven, earth, and its people. After giving himself up last month in Central African Republic, Ongwen was arrested and extradited to The Hague Court. He faces crimes against humanity and war crimes charges that include murder, enslavement, inhumane acts, and directing attacks against civilians. All date back to a 2004 attack on a camp for displaced people in northern Uganda. He's among several top LRA members wanted by the Hague Tribunal. Now 34, Ongwen rose the ranks as a child soldier. His lawyers are expected to use this troubled past as an argument for leniency. Still at large is LRA leader Joseph Kony, who's also Ugandan. He too is wanted by the ICC for war crimes and crimes against humanity charges. He's being pursued by U.S. Special Forces and regional troops. In the late 1980s, LRA rebels rose up against the government in northern Uganda. They left the country more than a decade ago and have since been moving around the region, accused of terrorizing communities in South Sudan, the Democratic Republic of Congo, and finally CAR.
And on this, I pronounce the hearing on the initial appearance of Mr. Dominic Ongwen closed.
Presiding Judge Ekaterina Trendafilova set Ongwen's next appearance for August. Those hearings will then determine whether or not he will face trial. Lisa Bryant for VOA News, Paris.
In Kenya, leaders from the northeastern part of the country are calling for teachers to return to work next week. The call follows days of protest by teachers in the capital, Nairobi, demanding the government relocate them to schools in safer parts of the country. Muhammad Yusuf reports for VOA from Nairobi.
A week after schools reopened, teachers are yet to report to work in northeastern Kenya for fear of their lives. For the past few days, more than 300 teachers stormed the Teacher Service Commission offices in Nairobi, requesting transfers to other school areas due to fear of being caught in Al-Shabaab terror attacks. Some expressed their fears.
We are here today telling the government that we are not going back to Northeastern because of insecurity.
So we are telling our government that we are not litmus paper to go and test our life from Northeastern province. Yeah. We are asking for transfer.
It's very clear that our brothers and sisters were butchered in Northeastern province. It's not fiction. Therefore, whoever has given a directive to us that we go back to Northeastern province is ill-advised.
Last November, Al-Shabaab gunmen ambushed a bus on the outskirts of Mandera, killing more than 20 people, most teachers. The terrorist group threatened to carry more attacks. When teachers refused to return to the classroom for a second week, regional and political leaders issued an ultimatum: report to work on Monday, February 2nd, or be fired. Parliament Majority Leader and lawmaker from the Northeast, Aden Duale, says everyone is concerned about safety, but abandoning the classroom is not the way to handle the situation.
We care for our teachers, we care for their security, and we are asking them to return to Mandera. If they don't return to Mandera by Monday next week, we are asking Teacher Service Commission to give chance to other Kenyan teachers.
Kenya National Union of Teachers leader Wilson Sossion says government leaders need to initiate a dialogue instead of threatening teachers.
The statements by the political leadership from Northeastern will not help but will worsen. The Honorable Aden Duale cannot dictate us around. It cannot dictate Teacher Service Commission. He's a mayor politician, and all he would be doing is to meet this group of teachers and assure them of security. This is an explosive issue, but he cannot issue threats. It is fear which brought these teachers out of Northeastern.
Sosia knows teachers want safety assurances, and the host community needs to play a role to keep teachers out of harm's way. Mandera Governor Ali Roba admits his county faces a security challenge and solutions are needed.
It's an extremely unfortunate position, and particularly if given by somebody who will call himself a leader like Sosion. He should get first-hand information on what's happening on the ground.
Interior Cabinet Secretary Joseph Olenkesiri says teachers will be safe, but he did not outline specific measures.
And I want to encourage and request the teachers just to be brave enough, just like all the other citizens living in Mandera, just to go and perform their duties without any fear, because there is security, and we shall provide security for them.
There have been fewer Al-Shabaab border incursions in the past 2 months, and the water officials say are stronger security measures. But many residents believe another attack against the few remaining teachers will put their children's education in jeopardy. Mohamed Yusuf for VOA News, Nairobi.
That's our show for this Tuesday. We now leave you with the song Take My Love, It's Free by South African musician Yvonne Chaka Chaka. We have been listening to Yvonne Chaka Chaka with the song Take My Love, It Is Free. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for listening. Join us again tomorrow for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.